Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Chris Lewis is on his way to Las Vegas with the women's basketball team. Big sports weekend for folks in and around the Boise area. Of course, we've got basketball, huge Mountain West game. Boise State taking on UNLV, 6 o'clock tomorrow night at Taco Bell Arena. The Super Bowl will be taking place on Sunday, kickoff around 4:30 Mountain Time, and then sandwiched, I guess, a little earlier than the basketball game, but maybe not, depending on how long it takes him to vote. Jerry Kramer will find out whether he gets in or not to the Hall of Fame.
Boy, I haven't remembered a weekend like this in a long time, Bob, so if I was... When you open up the show by saying Chris Lewis is on his way to Las Vegas, that's a pretty tempting thing to do, but I think I'd rather be here talking three huge stories with you on a Friday before the Super Bowl weekend. Jerry Kramer, an Idahoan, going to the Hall of Fame. I think it's going to happen. We'll dissect that and get down to it. Obviously, the biggest basketball game of the year so far tomorrow night, kind of a pre-warm-up until the Nevada game, and then I think the Super Bowl on Sunday speaks for itself.
For the basketball game, I think we're going to be saying, as long as Boise State keeps winning, this is the biggest game.
Yeah.
Because as you win and you're trying to battle for that ability to get an NCAA at large, of course, if you win the tournament, and if you're a high seed, you probably have a better chance to win the tournament. Yep. But if you win the tournament, you get in automatically. And that's whether you're San Jose State having not won a game in the league or you're Nevada or Boise State at the top of the standings. But the idea is to put yourself in a position that if you aren't the winner of the tournament, that you get in. And every loss that Boise State or Nevada or anybody in this conference would suffer puts you further and further away from the bubble. And Boise State has some tough games coming up. Everybody's circling that Valentine's Day game with Nevada.
Yep.
But home game tomorrow with UNLV, and then what I think are some tricky road spots. New Mexico, a team that looks to be about 500 in the league, but they haven't lost a home conference game at the Pit. And Utah State, we know over the years Boise State's gone down there with some good teams. Lately they've won, but I think with McEwen and Merrill in the backcourt, that could be a tougher game. Tomorrow, as we look at the game, you're going to see – the two players in this year's Mountain West class that are going to be drafted. And Chandler Hutchison
drafted this year.
And Chandler Hutchison may not be the higher of the two draftees.
Ooh, that's a good tease. This McCoy kid from Vegas is certainly one you want to kind of see. I've seen him on TV a couple of times. You've had a chance to look at him a little bit closer, a true freshman kid, a dominating player. It's funny to think, though, if you're looking at Boise State, not funny, it's ironic to look at Boise State's basketball team. They've won 18 of 22 games. They're undefeated at home. They have decidedly their best player ever in school history. And they're really on the fine margin of an NCAA tournament bid. I mean, how much more – I mean, if this team was 22-2 or 22-0, how much more can this team do? I understand that it's the haves and the have-nots at the NCAA tournament. But to your point, Boise State cannot afford to lose any games. The zero tolerance is almost there. If indeed they take the tournament out of it, these next four games, I think, are the toughest four games. We previewed that at KTIK.com today. The next four games between UNLV, the two road games, and then coming back on Valentine's Day for Nevada, that could decide Boise State's NCAA tournament hopes.
All right, let's take a look at UNLV for the moment. Boise State won the first meeting back on December the 30th. It was the second conference game for Boise State. It was the first one for UNLV. They had one of their byes prior to the second game of the season. Coach Rice talked a little bit about what he expects out of UNLV and the last meeting with them.
They seem like they're getting better and better, and you know they got all the pieces. They got terrific front line. Their guards are playing great. Point guards leading their team in scoring now in conference, and we played a great game down there and out rebounded them, and you know that's hard to do. And we're going to have our work cut out for us. People are going to be amazed when they see them live because, you know, a team like that that's as big as they are, you know, they kind of shock you when you first see them.
Go to the warm-ups tomorrow night. Look at that team. Ask yourself, how are they 5-4 in the Mountain West? When you look at their wins, they've beaten San Jose twice, Air Force, Colorado State, and a slumping San Diego State team. Their losses have been to Boise State, Utah State, New Mexico, Fresno State. They have not seen Nevada. They will see them for the first of two meetings coming up on Wednesday night.
In your 10 or so years doing this for Boise State basketball and football, Isn't that always the case with UNLV? It seems mm-hmm. like they always have great draft picks or great recruiting classes. They have coaches that come in. There's always turnover, and they never live up to their expectations. They have arguably over the last 10 to 20 years. Let's just stick with the last 10 years, because before that, I think they were pretty successful, very efficient with their talent. I think they do less with more talent than anybody else in this league right now. They've got great players. They got great recruiting classes, and it never shows up. And then there's coaching turnover. This is a program that just can't find itself right now. And recently against Boise State, they've struggled as well.
6 out of 7 wins for the Broncos. Boise State has won the last 4 times the teams have played here at Taco Bell Arena. Since 2012, UNLV has had 4 McDonald's All-Americans. The 3 of them before Brandon McCoy, the 7-foot freshman center that you will see tomorrow night, Steven Zimmerman, Rashad Vaughn, and Anthony Bennett were all one and dones.
Wow. And we expect this kid, McCoy, to be one and done. He's 18, 19 years old, true freshman out of Chicago, I believe. You expect him to be a one and done. Don't know if he's going to jump in front of Chandler Hutchinson, because we really don't know where Chandler Hutchinson is going to end up in the draft.
DraftNet.com has McCoy going in the first round and Hutchinson going in the second.
Does it?
7-footers. You can't coach size. I would be surprised if McCoy, based on size and potential, isn't taken first over Chandler.
How does this work tomorrow night? What kind of matchup do we need to look at? Because Boise State certainly doesn't have a 7-footer. Do they put Haney in there? Is it more of a zone? How do you attack the 7-footer?
They played a zone a lot last time. They also had a tremendous game from Zach Haney. Haney came to play. He had a double-double. I think arguably it was Haney's best game of the year, especially looking at who he's going against.
What about how he played defensively against McCoy?
Well, he kind of took him out of the game, and also UNLV kind of took their own guys out of the game. First half, they went inside to a very good power forward, Shakir Justin, and then Brandon McCoy. McCoy in the first half was 4 of 6 shooting. He only shot 3 times in the second half. Justin in the first half and the second half was 5 for 7 both times, but they made a much more of a conscious effort to go inside in the first half. The second half, the 2 guards, Johnson and Mooring, were a combined 8 for 30 shooting the ball, and the guards looked like they wanted to take over and said, where's our touches? And in my opinion, foolishly shot themselves out of the game.
Especially the way Boise State plays perimeter defense. Very strong perimeter defensive team. Very strong perimeter shooting team as well. So it's a good game for Boise State. Obviously, it's going to be close to a sellout, if not a sellout. I can't wait to compare the walking across the river sellout numbers to the riding the horse across campus sellout numbers, because that's how shallow and bitter I am sometimes. In case you haven't seen, the video is up, JP, on our iPhone. JP's our iPhone weather reporter?
It's an iReport, Prater. iReport.
iReport, JP, making a guest appearance on the show, has just pulled up his video of Leon Rice waltzing a horse in Chaps across campus.
Nice.
It's a spectacular video, a spectacular look, and JP was all over it today.
Well, Coach Rice has had 2 challenges. The fans have been 2 for 2 in challenges. They got him to walk across the river. And now for this game, the sellout with UNLV, so 2 sellouts in the same season. Outstanding. Coach Rice also last night on the coach's show talked about the crowd, and I know that we talked about it after the game, that 3-point win over San Diego State. He thought the crowd was worth 3 points in the game. He's talking about what he's expecting out of them tomorrow.
The energy that they give us, and, you know, our guys play hard, and I think that energy kind of picks them up. And, you know, sometimes the ebb and flow of momentum can switch benches. And when that happens, you know, usually the home team gets some energy from their crowd and it brings it back to their bench. And, you know, that's what we need, because there's going to be a lot of scoring usually when we play UNLV and, you know, lots of ebbs and flow of the game. We just need the energy to keep going and lift these guys up.
And that was Coach Rice talking about what he's expecting out of the crowd. And again, makes a big difference. And I think that's one of the reasons why Leon is challenging the crowd, because he knows there are so many tough venues in the Mountain West where you might stumble at the Pit or at Utah State next week. And he'd like to, I think, keep a bagel on that right side of the record with the home team.
Yeah, Boise State's in a really unprecedented home season. They have 2 remarkable seasons in their past, a 13-0 season where they won all their games. And then they also have a 16-1 season. So if they win all their games, home games for the rest of the season with this kind of support, they'll finish the home season 16-0. They also have a chance to break a 20-year attendance mark in terms of average attendance. So crowds like this are going to help. There's senior night with Wyoming coming up as well. We all know about the Nevada game, which isn't selling as great as it was. We thought maybe it was. They finally opened up some balcony seats, so sales are picking up. I'm assuming Coach Rice is going to have another kind of a stunt for us. I don't know what you do at this point to get more fans in there at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night, on Valentine's Day night. Even though Nevada is the marquee opponent, that's still a tough draw. These next two home games are going to do a lot in terms of the crowd, the attendance, and deciding Boise State's future.
And again, UNLV coming in against Boise State. Coach talked also last night on the coach's show. Well, we'll get to it a little later. He talked about how you defend McCoy, so we'll get to that in the second hour because I think McCoy is the key. The more he takes part in the game, the better UNLV is.
Sure.
The more he kind of stands around and doesn't do things, the less UNLV.
And as an 18, 19-year-old true freshman, that does happen with him a few times?
Yes, he does. Sometimes he has a way of being taken out of the game or where he doesn't always play consistently throughout the whole
time. That'll be a really fascinating matchup to watch tomorrow night.
Super Bowl will be on Sports Radio The Ticket. Kevin Harlan and Boomer Esiason have the call at 4:35 on Sunday. Mike Holmgren, Tony Boselli, and Ed Werder will contribute as well. Pregame will feature also Cardinals receiver Larry Fitzgerald and Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. It all starts at noon right here. So if you can't watch it, listen to it on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket, your Super Bowl station. Up next, what's going to decide the Super Bowl? Prater and I will weigh in next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. We are back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Bob Beeler along today with Mike Prater. Chris is out traveling to Las Vegas for the women's game tomorrow. We got the men's game between Boise State and UNLV tomorrow at 6, 5:30 pregame. You can hear both over on 670 KBOI and right here on 93.1 The Ticket. Super Bowl also can be heard right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. Coverage will begin at noon, and it's the Eagles and the Patriots. And I think as the week has gone along, I have found this game much more intriguing than I thought it was going to be when the games were finished 2 weeks ago in the championship games. I'm very interested to see how Nick Foles, who has been the darling of the playoffs so far, stands up in the Super Bowl. Kind of reminds me a little of Jeff Hostetler filling in for Phil Simms when the Giants won the Super Bowl many, many moons ago. And then, of course, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick going for yet another Super Bowl. They are looking for number 6. They're 5-2 right now in the Super Bowl. How the Eagles attack him, how they attack the Eagles, and maybe are there any shenanigans involved in this Super Bowl?
Oh, there's going to be shenanigans, Bob. I promise you there'll be some shenanigans. 1.35 billion chicken wings will be eaten on Sunday, so don't forget those kinds of shenanigans. I got all kinds of stats like that if you want them, by the way. We can break down X's and O's, or we can break down Pink's time at the national anthem. But in terms of the football, I think this, if there's one guy that's going to decide this game, and this is a ridiculous comment, it's going to be Nick Foles. I really do. I think he's going to be the X factor. If he comes out and plays great football, I think the Eagles are good enough to beat the Patriots. I like the Eagles' defense. I like the way they handle it. I did see a stat today talking about pressure. I love the Pro Football Focus guys as they break it down, the X's and O's, and do stuff and take you to another level that you can't always figure out on your own. Tom Brady, like three of the last 4 years, and this year is the number one quarterback in the NFL under pressure. And under pressures. Everybody says if you get to Brady, get to Brady, get to Brady, that's the number one way to do it. It doesn't work that way. So the Eagles are going to have to figure out a way to get to Brady and then take it to another level. And I think, you know, defensively, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But if Nick Foles can match Tom Brady point for point or pass for pass or however it works, which is a ridiculous notion, Nick Foles versus Tom Brady on paper, that's a blowout. I think Nick Foles is going to be able to handle it tomorrow or Sunday.
I think the Eagles' defense is maybe also where things are going to have to happen. I look at the Eagles, and when you look at one of the spots that has given them trouble all season, they've had trouble with good tight ends. The teams with good tight ends, Kansas City's Kelsey had a big game against them. Both times they faced the Giants, Evan Engram had a big game against them. Mm-hmm. And twice against the Redskins, Jordan Reed had a big game against them. If I'm the Eagles, I'm very concerned about Rob Gronkowski. He is the one guy on their offense that I don't know that I can account for. And maybe getting to Brady and handling the line of scrimmage will make the biggest difference. But assuming that Gronk is 100%, it appears he's been cleared to play. Whether he's 100% or whether anybody's 100% at this stage, that remains to be seen.
Sure.
But I think that's a matchup that if I'm the Eagles, I'm really concerned about. If I'm the Patriots, the matchup that I'm really worried about is my offensive line against the Eagles front seven, because I think the Eagles front seven is pretty darn good.
The Eagles front seven is very good, and they're going to get pressure on Brady, but you know, as I just said, and as Pro Football Focus pointed out, and as we've seen before our eyes for many, many years, it doesn't seem to matter to Tom Brady, even though that's the standard operating procedure. Get after Brady, get in pressure, but it doesn't matter. He still pulls it off. So I like your Gronk, you know, analogy. The Eagles don't have anybody that can block him, and you know that Brady is going to come out and take advantage of that as much as possible. I don't know how much you practice on this. I don't know how much you think about this, but the Patriots have proven that they can win without Gronkowski on the field. But if you can get rid of him somehow, that hit in the last game, it wasn't a dirty, illegal hit. It was a penalty. There was no doubt it was a penalty, but it wasn't a dirty, cheap shot. It was a good, rough, bang-bang football player that resulted in Gronkowski leaving. Figure out a way to get him out of the football game. Don't go out there and be a thug. But if you can get rid of him, that's advantage to Philadelphia easily.
I think when this game is said and done, I have more confidence if the Patriots are down going to the fourth quarter based on past performance than if Foles is down. So I think it's important for the Eagles to get in front. And I know the Falcons got in front, the Jaguars got in front, and weren't able to hold on. But I don't think any recipe for the Patriots comes with you coming back from 10 or 14 points down in the fourth quarter.
I didn't get a chance to confirm this, and it's a ridiculous stat. Seventh Super Bowl? No, this is the eighth Super Bowl for Brady and Belichick, right?
Mm-hmm.
In their previous seven Super Bowls together, the Patriots have never scored in the first quarter. I find that to be pretty fascinating. Seven games is a big sample size, especially when you're dealing with Belichick and Brady. Mm-hmm. So jump out on them early. The way this game's going to go on Sunday, the Eagles are going to jump out on them early, whether that stat holds true or not. And then then the Patriots are going to come back in the fourth quarter with Brady's hands in the ball in the hands. And you know, let's see what happens. But, of course, last year was a completely different Super Bowl, 28-3, and then it got really weird after that.
The Patriots have had a lot of them that have been really weird. I just have a feeling that this year's Super Bowl, like Chris has talked about it, reminding him of a blowout Super Bowl with Denver and Seattle, where all the things started to go against the one team and in favor of the other team, and he sees the Eagles winning big. This Super Bowl of the previous Patriot ones reminds me of the Rams Super Bowl, the first one that Belichick and Brady played together, where they came in as the underdogs. The Rams were the defending champion. The Rams had the team that everybody kind of thought was going to win. And I'm thinking, to me, the Eagles remind me of the Patriots. Not to say that Foles reminds me of Brady,
sure,
but maybe Wentz reminds me of Brady if he was in the game, and that maybe this is a team that nobody expected to be there, that really got to be the best team in the league that year and got to the championship game and ended up beating the Rams. So I think it's going to be close. I don't know that it's going to be close enough. I didn't have it picked to go down to the last field goal at the last second like Adam Vinatieri made in 2001. But I think it's going to be close. I have the Eagles winning by seven, and I'm saying it sort of hesitatingly because I think the quarterback edge is so decided for New England, but I'm looking at everything else, and I'm saying I think the Eagles are better here. I think the Eagles are better there. You know, and maybe the one wild card that we don't know, Doug Peterson, only in his second year as a head coach, how does he stand up making the decisions on the spot against Bill Belichick?
So far, so good for that guy. You know, he's been pretty Teflon so far and has done a really nice job. Of course, he's been there before as a player and kind of knows the drill. But, yeah, I mean, this is his first time on the big stage, and matching wits as the head coach against Bill Belichick is always going to be a tough deal. But you go 7 points, I'm going to go I'll go Eagles by three. I don't think
the Eagles, like the Eagles, too?
I do like the Eagles a lot. I do like the Eagles a lot. And obviously the country likes the Eagles a lot, you know, whether that's jaded feelings toward the Patriots or not. But the Vegas money has been rolling heavily on the Eagles. That line has dropped from 5.5 to, what, roughly 4.5 now. So America wants the Eagles to win it. And I think there's some educated, smart football decision-making that's going into that.
Are you surprised, just on this station, you're picking them? I'm picking them. Chris is picking them. We had Ron Flatter from VSiN out of Las Vegas that's covering at Minnesota. He's picking them. And if I'm not mistaken, if I was listening correctly driving over to the coach's show last night, Lee Sterling, our gambling expert, is picking the Eagles.
Wow.
Are too many people picking the Eagles?
Probably.
Because I thought I was going to be kind of out on an outsider, maybe looking smart if it came through.
I've been sniffing around with my buddies trying to find a bet. Well, I've been looking for somebody that wants to bet on the Patriots because you know I just was curious, and I kind of pulled some buddies and talked to some other buddies. A lot of people I know are picking the Eagles as well, so it's kind of scary that we're all going against Brady and Belichick. That's scary. That's a scary thought for those guys, because you know that they're going to come through and probably pull it off.
And the Patriots have had so many close games. I mean, they are 5-2 in the Brady Belichick era in Super Bowls. You could make a case. Well, I guess you could make a case they could have lost to the Rams. But you could have made a case that they should have lost to the Seahawks and probably should have lost last year to the Falcons. So instead of 5-2 right now, they could be sitting at 3-4. Now, for a team to win three Super Bowls in the last, what is that, 20 years, 15, 20 years, that's still pretty darn good. Sure. To win three Super Bowls.
Yes.
But it's not five.
No. And let's hope it's not six. Let's keep the Steelers at six and nobody else. I like that stat, and I don't want the Patriots to get to six.
I think it's better for the league. A lot of people say, well, who does the league want? Or, you know, I think the league wanted the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Certainly didn't want Jacksonville.
No, they did not. Do you think the league wants to see the Steelers? I mean, excuse me, the Eagles win. Do you think the league? When I mean the league, I mean
what's better for the league.
What's better for the league? Is the league better off having the dynasty roll on and people be mad that the Patriots won, or is the league better off to get a new blood at the top of the league, somebody that's never won before?
I think it would help the league if the Eagles won. Or let me phrase it another way. I think it would help the league if the Patriots lost.
Mm-hmm.
Three things need to happen tomorrow. This is a very critical weekend for the NFL, which we all know the issues that they've had. No controversies, no issues, whether it's off the field, officiating, players doing something stupid. They just can't have any controversial headlines for the next 48 hours as they get through this football game. A Patriots loss certainly would help, and a tight game would certainly help as well. I think TV ratings are going to be down for this game. I don't sense the kind of $100 million buzz, 100 million people buzz for the Super Bowl like we have. It's going to still be in that ballpark, and they're going to, at the end of the day, they'll be down, I think, percentage-wise in terms of viewership, because that's the trend we're going, period. But if they can get a close competitive game, if the Patriots can lose, and if it can be a controversial free weekend, that's going to help the NFL going into the offseason.
And are we going to put no what's a catch or no review or no something also in the no controversy, where the game is decided, it's close, it's exciting, but nobody has a beef over how it ended, correct?
Correct. I mean, if the Patriots win and there's a controversial call and three knuckleheads don't stand for the national anthem, the NFL's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Big time NFL trouble.
Diamond Dig 8 will start on Monday at 1 during Idaho Sports Talk. Tune in for your chance to qualify to win a 14-carat white gold Lee Reed 1.5-carat diamond ring worth $4,200. 17 qualifiers will dig through a pastry perfection cake on Valentine's Day to see who gets the Lee Reed diamond. Diamond Dig 8 will start on Monday at 1 on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. What did Leon Rice spend his morning doing? It was Groundhog Day, but I don't think it had anything to do with groundhogs. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
We'll start a Ticket Sports update with a little bit of a Boise State update. For the second time this year, Boise State head coach Leon Rice had challenged to sell out Taco Bell Arena. And for the second time this year, he got one. Leon Rice and his trusty horse Max rode across campus today at 11 a.m. It was announced that the game against UNLV on Saturday was sold out. Leon Rice will be going for his 100th home win tomorrow. That game will be at 6 p.m. You can check out our Twitter page, the Facebook page, ktik.com. JP got all the good pictures and videos of Leon Rice and Max across Boise State's campus.
Eighth season for Coach Rice, 160 wins, 91 losses. He has been to two NCAA tournaments. And I think maybe the most impressive thing that he has done is he has really brought energy to this community for basketball. I mean, I look at where it was when he took it over and where it is now. I mean, we're talking about sellouts. We're talking about contending for a Mountain West championship. He's done a fantastic job as head coach at Boise State.
This has been the best season in Boise State basketball in about 20 years. It seems like every 20 years, Boise State basketball, well, you know, in the late 1980s, we knew that there was the Bobby Dye era that challenged and played a lot of NCAA tournaments. Then the Roberto Bergeson era came along about 10 years later. And about 20 years later now, we have the Chandler Hutchinson era. And it has been electric. I remember a lot of those, you know, Roberto Bergeson games. I wasn't here in the late 1980s, so I wasn't aware of what it was like. I went to the Utah BSU NIT game in 1987, I believe it was. And that was a spectacular environment, a spectacular place. So they've been cranking out at Taco Bell Arena for a long time. But this year, I think, is shaping up to be very memorable in terms of the number of fans, the energy in that building, the wins in that season. They haven't lost. They're winning all the games they're supposed to win. But they got four more big ones, and none of this matters unless Cleon Rice can complete the deal.
Well, and Bob, as Bob and I have learned over the last month, sometimes it would be nice to not be a sports fan. You wouldn't have to suffer through heartbreaking defeats, though also not being a sports fan can have its downside, as some contestants on Jeopardy learned last night.
Football 200. Your choice, do or don't name this play in which the quarterback runs the ball and can choose to pitch it to another back. It's an option play. Ryan?
Football 400.
I can tell you guys are big football fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom Landry perfected the shotgun formation with this team. Dallas Cowboys. Do you think we should go to commercial? Ryan?
Take it down to 600.
Okay, by signaling for one of these, a returner can reel in a kick without fear of getting tackled. Fair catch. Two clues left, Ryan.
800.
These penalties are simultaneous violations by the offense and defense that cancel each other out. And they are called offsetting penalties. Let's look at the $1,000 clue just for the fun of it. Jimmy?
As Minneapolis's U.S. Bank Stadium prepares to host Super Bowl 52, I'm looking at the Ring of Honor with names from this defensive line. They took the Vikings to four Super Bowls.
If you guys ring in and get this one, I will die. Who are the purple people eaters?
And that was Alex Trebek on Jeopardy. And I think all of those contestants didn't even want to get anywhere near their buzzer, because if they accidentally rung in, they knew they weren't going to get it, and they would lose anywhere from $200 to $1,000 for a non-answer.
Oh, that's hilarious. We could sit here and laugh at them all we want, but then they'll probably ask some kind of crazy nuclear technology question,
right,
and they would answer, and we wouldn't have a clue. So.
Right. So I was trying to think of the fourth purple people eater is the one, because I think there were different ones. It was Alan Page,
yep,
Jim Marshall, and Carl Eller that were there the whole time.
Yep.
And I think the fourth defensive lineman, I think there was more than one that didn't kind of like, wasn't as big name as those three.
I just remember the three for sure, but I'm sure Fish does too.
Yeah, you know, right there. Bob had all of them. He took them right out of my mouth. Well, Le'Veon Bell not expected to hit free agency this year. He's expected to stay with the Steelers. But if he does, his services might be quite expensive for some teams. Eric Stremkoff, who is a self-proclaimed Jets spokesperson, reached out to Bell on Twitter, said, "I speak on behalf of the Jets. We will give you $60 million in cash if you come play for us." Bell responded by saying, "That ain't enough to come run with the Jets."
Woo, baby. As a Steelers fan, this is going to get really weird, because Le'Veon Bell likes to speak his mind. He's not afraid of pushing it a little bit. And obviously, he's a phenomenal running back with great talent. His services are going to be very much in demand. I hope the Steelers can lock him up for $50, $60, $70 million, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
With the receivers the Steelers have now on offense, and with Ben Roethlisberger on the backside of his career,
mm-hmm,
still some productive years left.
Oh, yeah.
And Le'Veon Bell, this is a now team. They should have done better this year than they did. You know, losing the game to the Patriots in the regular season at home, and then losing to Jacksonville at home.
Yep.
Not a good finish for the Steelers. But you're right there. And on an AFC side, it's not as strong as the NFC. I don't know why you'd want to break the band up at this point.
Because the Steelers don't have a history of not paying, of not going out with these irresponsible contracts. And most of the time, I appreciate that. In this particular time, give Le'Veon Bell whatever the hell he wants.
Well, the NFL plans to announce their awards this weekend before the Super Bowl, such as the MVP, Coach of the Year, and other things. And it seems that the MVP might already be determined. That would be Tom Brady, according to Brad E. Schlossman on Twitter. He had a picture from the media events in Minneapolis where a Patriots staffer seemed to be holding what was read as Tom Brady's acceptance speech for the MVP award.
You know, it's interesting. If the MVP is like most sports, votes are done as soon as the regular season is over, and what happens in the playoffs has no bearing in it. I thought Carson Wentz was the MVP until about 3 weeks left to go in the season. I'm not sure that there really is an MVP. I mean, maybe Brady's going to get it on Lifetime Achievement, but I don't know that he had one of his better years. I mean, other than you could say maybe this Patriot team isn't as good as some of the other Patriot teams.
I would like it to go to either I think Gurley's got an outside chance. Antonio Brown should be in consideration, mm-hmm. but he won't be. I don't know if I'm missing anybody else. Fish, does that kind of cover him? Or?
Yeah, pretty much Wentz, Gurley, Brady, Brown. That's your top four.
I think Gurley has the numbers that could actually, should be thrown.
And to be honest with you, maybe if Gurley doesn't run the way he does, the Rams, to me, were as big of or bigger surprise than the Eagles were this year.
Well, especially the offensive turnaround. Absolutely. Massive.
So maybe he deserves it.
I think he does.
Well, as the Patriots are in there, back-to-back Super Bowl. We all remember what happened last year. The Atlanta Falcons jumped up to a 28-3 lead, then couldn't hold on. And Arthur Blank is still upset about it. And his frustrations have now leaked over to being targeted at Robert Kraft. Blank told the New York Times that Kraft and him had a discussion after Super Bowl 51. And Blank told Kraft, you don't need to do the 28-3 thing in the ring. Kraft didn't listen. And, of course, the Patriots Super Bowl rings from last year have 283 diamonds.
I'm sorry, if you lost and your team gave up a 28-3 lead, the Patriots can do whatever they want. I'm sorry if you're the Falcons and you're disappointed, but hey, that's the game. The Patriots came back 28-3. As negative as it is for a number for the Falcons, 28-3 is as positive a number for the Patriots. Win the game next time, then you can decide how many diamonds are in the ring.
28-3 will never go away in Atlanta. Even if they win a Super Bowl again, it will never go away. So deal with it. Live with it. You put it together, live with it.
Well, MLB free agency continues to remain slow, and spring training reporting dates are just weeks away. And according to Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, players had a conference call where they asked about the viability of collectively refusing to show up at spring training until February 24th, which is the latest date they could report. However, the union informed the players that an organized action of that sort would constitute an unlawful strike, would be in violation of the CBA, so that idea has been dropped.
When I look at the players that are out there that are holding out, I do think that what the players are hoping for, the long-term deals, the 7 years for whatever, I think the owners have decided they don't want to give those out. Is that collusion or is that smart business?
Depends on which side you're on.
Correct.
To me, it's smart business. If I'm a player, I probably feel a little bit more pain on the other side.
But there are some players out there that maybe be able to be picked up at more of bargains, and I don't mean bargains per year, but bargains on a length of contract. I think that if you look at some of these free agents that are out there, Arrieta is one of them. He wants a 6-year deal or whatever he wants. I would be very hesitant as a general manager or owner to give him that. But I'd give him pretty good dollars for a 1 or 2 year deal.
There you go.
Well, it seemed like if all three Vikings quarterbacks from this year, Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, and Case Keenum, were set to become free agents. However, Bridgewater might not become a free agent after all. He played sparingly this year after he tore several ligaments in his knee back in 2016. He was on the PUP list until October 16th, and that could be important because it means Bridgewater's contract might be rolled over till next year, meaning he would be with the Vikings for the $1.3 million he made this year. Vikings GM Rick Spielman said if this goes into that area of the contract rolling over, it's no longer a Vikings decision. That's on the NFL and the players' union to decide what will go from there.
Well, I don't know. I would have thought if you were on the team and you were on IR, that counts as a year.
Seems like it. Still working. Still getting a paycheck, right?
Still coming to rehab or doing whatever you're doing. Workman's comp probably kicked in. So, I don't know. That's going to be an interesting one. That one may go to an arbiter.
They're saying that might be a legal battle between the players' union and the NFL. So, we'll just see there. And then we'll end the sports update on a quick non-iPhone. This is a gopher weather update. Puxatony Phil saw his shadow today, which means there's supposed to be 6 more weeks of winter until things warm up.
So. But, you know, the thing about Puxatony Phil, if he's doing it in Puxatony, Pennsylvania, maybe a groundhog if he popped himself up in Arizona or in Idaho or whoever, wherever the place would be, would see something different. So that's why I've always wondered why this place in Pennsylvania calls it for the whole country, because it doesn't. We've had virtually no winter this year here in Idaho.
Bob's all fired up. I like that. I never thought of the conspiracy theory over the... Is it a gopher? What is it?
It's a groundhog.
It's a groundhog.
I guess it's Groundhog's Day. Is groundhog like a gopher? They're kind of like gophers.
It's a rodent.
Yeah, it's a rodent. Similar. I feel like they're similar enough.
Twitter, I think you're wrong, though, Fish, because Twitter said that since we saw his shadow, that now we get 6 more years of Tom Brady.
Oh, okay. It's basically been that way. So.
Yeah.
KTIK.com to win some grub and scrub for the big game this Sunday. Westside Drive-In will provide a big game feast for up to 15 people. And then Molly Maid will come by to clean up the kitchen and viewing area. Register at KTIK.com by this afternoon at 5. It's the big game grub and scrub giveaway brought to you by Westside Drive-In, Molly Maid, and Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, Prater and I will have quick hits. What's the best way to get an NFL head coaching job? And what will never happen 5 hours from Boise? That's next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
All right, Prater instead of Chris today. Every year at this time, Tom Brady seems to be playing in the Super Bowl. There's a name that's kind of connected with Tom Brady that has a Boise State tie, and that is Dave Stahelski. So clue us in as to why Dave Stahelski, a former Boise State tight end, is important.
Well, longtime Boise State fans are knowing exactly what I'm going to go with this. And this is one of my all-time favorite sports stats. And a lot has been made about Tom Brady and where he was drafted by the Patriots. We all know he was drafted at 199th overall in the 2000 draft in the sixth round. In the fifth round, the New England Patriots, one round before they took Tom Brady, took Boise State tight end Dave Stahelski, who at one point was playing defensive end for the Broncos. Big, strong kid out of Washington, massive body, couldn't really move an awful lot. But he went in the fifth round to the New England Patriots, went to camp with the New England Patriots in the fall of 2000 and didn't even make it out of camp. Got cut by the Patriots and ended up signing with the New Orleans Saints, Fish's favorite football team, before Fish was, I guess you were probably three or four or five Fish at that time.
That was played, about six, yeah.
Played nine games over two seasons with the New Orleans Saints, caught one pass, and then he got cut. So Dave Stahelski, who was taken roughly 141st overall, which is, 58 spots ahead of Tom Brady. I don't have to sit here and tell you what Tom Brady's career looks like now. Where is Dave Stahelski these days? Tried to find out today where he is a little bit. I think he ended up, according to some people, maybe ended up in Austin, Texas, maybe at the University of Texas. He was always a really quiet, quirky kind of guy, a really smart guy with maybe that engineering kind of mind. So I'm not sure where Dave Stahelski is now, but I always think of Dave Stahelski. And I was doing a little research today, by the way, on that 2000 draft. The quarterback taken before Tom Brady. It was 16 spots in front of Tom Brady. Cleveland Browns in the sixth round took a quarterback, Spurgeon Winn.
And just looking at him, he was out of Texas State, so was an FCS player at the time. There were five others that were taken that the names may be a little more known. Chad Pennington at Marshall was the first quarterback taken by the Jets. Giovanni Carmazzi out of Hofstra. Actually, I did one of his games, maybe two of his games, when UMass played Hofstra. Chris Redman, Louisville. T. Martin out of Tennessee, and then Mark Bulger out of West Virginia, and then the aforementioned Spurgeon Winn. So those were the six quarterbacks taken in front of Tom Brady, and they have no Super Bowls. I'm not sure how many even wins they have in the NFL amongst themselves.
And how funny and how ironic is it that it was the Browns that had to pick the quarterback right before the Patriots? They could have taken. Can you imagine in 2000 if the Cleveland Browns had drafted Tom Brady? Where was Bill Belichick coaching then? Because wasn't he coached for the Browns at one point, didn't he?
Yeah, but I can't remember if he was in the old or the new incarnation of the Browns. He might have been before the Browns moved.
Interesting fact, but once again, thinking of Dave Stahelski, I hope you're well, Dave, wherever you are, but you're not Tom Brady.
Topic number two.
Bob, what's the best way to get an NFL coaching job these days?
Well, I think it's to sign up with Bill Belichick as a Patriot assistant. When you look at how many Patriot assistants have gotten jobs, that list is long. Seems like whoever's the coordinator in a Super Bowl year gets it. Romeo Crennel has gone on to a head job. Now, a lot of these guys haven't done very well, but they've gotten head opportunities. Charlie Weiss, Eric Mangini, Bill O'Brien threw a head coaching job at Penn State, and most recently McDaniels again, and Matt Patricia, the defensive line coach or defensive coordinator, are going to the Colts and Lions respectively. After the Super Bowl, it's reported that Greg Schiano, former head coach at Tampa Bay, is going to interview and possibly be the new defensive coordinator with New England. He's with Ohio State right now. If he wants to get back into the pro game coaching, he didn't have a real good 2 years at Tampa. I think the best way for him to go back is to be Belichick's assistant because it seems like those guys get jobs.
I like it.
Topic number three.
NBA All-Star Game, 5 hours from Boise down in Salt Lake. Will it happen?
No, no, no. I spent the last couple days in Salt Lake City, and I listened to a lot of radio talk shows, checked out some newspaper reports. And one of the big buzz stories down there right now is that the NBA, they're going to bid on the NBA All-Star Game for 2022 or 2023. Why is this potentially exciting? Well, the NBA All-Star Game is definitely on my bucket list. I want to go see it. I want to go hang out all weekend. I don't think it's a great sporting event, but I think if you were there in person with the buzz for a weekend, because they turned it into a three-day weekend, and it seems like it's a lot of fun, a lot of festive stuff going on. Salt Lake City is the closest NBA market to Boise. You can get from your driveway to the parking lot in 5 hours. And apparently, according to Salt Lake media, in 2022 or 2023, you can go to Salt Lake and watch the NBA All-Star Game. Wrong. It's never going to happen. Why on earth would the NBA go to Salt Lake City? Yes, it's one of my all-time favorite cities. Yes, it gets a bad rap for a lot of its stuff, but the NBA will never go there. They had the All-Star Game in 1993. That was a long time ago. The selling points that they're putting out there, we have a brand new renovated arena. It's nice, but it's not going to attract an All-Star Game. We have more hotel rooms. We have better nightlife. We have an expanded airport terminals. Wrong, wrong, wrong. There's one nightclub in Salt Lake City. One nightclub. This is a hip-hop celebration weekend. This is a place, this is something that it should always be in Vegas or Madison Square Garden. It starts on Thursday night. Parties are on Friday night. Parties are on Saturday night. There's TV shows all 3 days. And then there's a big party all day on Sunday. With the liquor laws in Salt Lake City, which are, if you went down there as an individual knowing what to do, you could take care of business. But a three-day bender at the All-Star Game in Salt Lake City for the NBA guys, it's never going to happen. The clubs aren't there. The nightlife isn't there. The pomp and circumstances isn't there. I'd love to see it because it's an easy drive, and I'd like to go down for the weekend. But Salt Lake City, if you think you're getting an NBA All-Star Game, you are dreaming.
If they do get it, we're going to publish Prater's Guide and hand it out to all the NBA people.
I'm going to make that happen. They're going to have to bring – I guess you can do pop-up nightclubs. Bring in a nightclub for 3 or 4 nights. You know, they did it during the Olympics. The Olympics, though, aren't a destination place to go party for 3 days. Unfortunately, the NBA All-Star Game has become that.
Topic number four.
Oh, Bob, driving back from Salt Lake City yesterday, I checked out the video. Russell Westbrook and a fan got into it last night. What's going on?
Well, Russell Westbrook, to me, is completely in the right. If Russell Westbrook had gone into the stands to do something to a fan, Russell Westbrook should have had the book thrown at him.
Yep.
Players are not to do anything with the fans. But by the same token, if the fan is on the floor, it's like going into the lion's den. You are at your own risk. He's lucky, the fan I'm speaking, that he wasn't punched in the nose and broken in the nose. He was just kind of shoved out of the way. If you are on the floor, whatever happens to you, I'm sorry, but that's your problem.
I totally agree with that. And anybody that thinks that Russell Westbrook, just it was a pretty simple shove. Yeah, a punch would have been certainly appropriate. That would have probably created a lot of other issues and headaches. I don't know if this guy was arrested. I don't know if he was banned from the arena. I don't know what the aftermath of it was. I saw the video of this streaker at the golf tournament yesterday, and then I saw the video of this guy last night. I'd be proud to be that streaker running around doing all kinds of crazy things on the 16th hole at the Phoenix Open. That guy last night, whether alcohol was involved or not, needs to be thrown in jail.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
You know, whenever I think of somebody coming onto the field, I think of that incident in Chicago where those two guys came out at the White Sox with a knife at the first base coach. I think it was for Kansas City at the time. When you're a player and somebody is out there, you have to think of the worst. You have to think of trying to protect yourself. There are, every once in a while, you'll go to a baseball game and you'll see some fool out on the field. One time I remember watching a game when I was a kid, the Baltimore Colts were playing, and a fan came on the field in Baltimore. Mike Curtis, the middle linebacker, leveled him like he was a running back trying to get into the hole.
Nice. I always think of Monica Seles. That's where my mind goes first.
Yeah.
You know, the day that Monica Seles was stabbed changed everything in terms of that kind of story for me.
Up next, possible good story for Idaho. Jerry Kramer finds out whether he's a Hall of Famer. How does the process work? That's next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Any story that you can localize, it makes it more fun. Like, I think watching the Philadelphia Eagles with Jay Ajayi on the team makes the Eagles, for me, more fun to watch because I know Jay, watched him play college football here at Boise State, know Jay, and I'm excited to see him play in the Super Bowl and hopefully win the Super Bowl game.
Absolutely.
Jerry Kramer is from the University of Idaho, longtime player with the Packers, played 11 seasons in the NFL, 5 times All-Pro first team, another time second team All-Pro. He's a guy that has been on your show, Mike, with you and Jeff Caves for a number of years in his quest to get into the NFL Hall of Fame. He has lived in the area. People know him. And I think when you're looking at a list of guys being considered for the Hall of Fame, it really adds a local element. And really, this is the first time, I believe, since, what, 97, Mike, that he has had a very good chance to get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, 97 was the last time he was a finalist. This is his 11th time as a finalist and his 45th year of eligibility. The story of Jerry Kramer trying to get into the Hall of Fame has been told for a long, long time, and I think it's going to happen tomorrow night. This is exactly what's going to happen tomorrow. The selection committee, and there's 48 of them. There's a writer in all 32 NFL cities and then 16 at-large. They'll meet in Minneapolis. I believe it's in the same hotel where all the finalists are going to be sequestered. That's the 2 senior finalists, the contributor finalists, and there's 15 finalists, I believe, for the modern-day era selection committee. What's going to happen in the morning? The first thing that the selection committee will do, they'll debate Jerry Kramer, and then they'll vote. And of those 48 people, 39 of them have to say yes. Then they'll do the same thing with Robert Brazil. Then they'll do the same thing with Beathard, the contributor. Those guys are standing on their own in terms of votes. So you debate Jerry Kramer's career, then you sit down and vote. You debate Brazil's career, you sit down and vote. Then you get to the main ones. So that's where it gets a little tricky. That's where these guys are being compared to each other because they can only have 5 of these 15 guys can go in. The Pro Football Hall of Fame class can never be more than 8. And so now we have these 3 previous guys, if they make it. You know, and I think Brazil and I think Kramer will make it, and I think Beathard will make it. They're there for the right reasons. And then they'll have to pare this down to 5. Somewhere between 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, based on how long these debates go, we may or may not start hearing words. They'll go upstairs. They'll knock on doors. They're going to say, no, you didn't make it. Go back home and leave. We'll leave you a bill. Or they're going to say, congratulations, you're in the Hall of Fame. And then some guy's going to pop up behind you with a social media camera and videotape the whole thing and put it on social media. And then they're going to go down to the 6 o'clock Mountain Time Honors NFL show, where this class will be honored during a national television broadcast.
So just to clarify in my own mind what you said, it is possible that Brazil, Kramer, and Beathard all could get in, or none of them could get
Correct.
In.
Correct.
They're not going against each other.
Correct.
They are just, we either think you're a Hall of Famer or not.
Yes.
And they debate a little bit, and then he needs 39 out of 48 in the room to say yes.
Yes, and I believe this is the last chance, although I think we've been told that before, that Jerry Kramer has in terms of getting into the Hall of Fame. You know, everybody knows that he's one of the top 50 NFL players on the all-time NFL 50 players list who I don't believe made it to the Hall of Fame. Is he guilty by association because so many other Packers are in that Super Bowl or from that Super Bowl era are in the Hall of Fame? Is it because he played guard? I mean, you could sit and debate, and we have for 20 years, why Jerry Kramer is not in the Hall of Fame, but I think it's finally going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be a close vote. He's not going to get more than 40, 41 votes, I don't think. I'm not even sure they publicly release that information, but he needs 39 out of 48 to make it.
I look at it now. If he's on the other list and you're saying who's more deserving, I may or may not vote for Jerry Kramer. I don't know. I don't know how Jerry Kramer stacks up against, you know, to me, first of all, you'd have to look at him against Tony Boselli and Alan Faneca and Stephen Hutchinson and Joe Jacoby because those are the offensive linemen that are in the other group. Because to me, you have to be, for me to vote for somebody, they'd have to be the best one at their position group. And then I'd then go to the apples and oranges and compare them with a cornerback, a linebacker, a wide receiver, a quarterback, or whoever else is on the ballot. But to me, at this time, you're deciding whether the guy is either a Hall of Famer or he's not. I don't know that I could sit there, if I was a beat writer from Miami or wherever I'd be from, and deny somebody that had come this far, because you're not really taking it away from somebody else.
Exactly. And I think the sentimental factor comes into play here. He's, you know, the campaign's been very high profile and very public, you know, many times locally here led by his daughter. But the campaign has gone, you know, obviously all the way to Green Bay and across the nation. So, you know, I mean, he's obviously in his 45th year of eligibility and not in the Hall of Fame. So there is a – he is a borderline Hall of Famer, whether he gets in or not. Again, I think he will. He started at right guard in 6 NFL championships. Key player for the Packers during that time. There's not a lot of stats. There's really nothing sexy about what Jerry Kramer did in football other than just go to work every day and do your job and not screw up, which was one of the greatest dynasties in pro football history.
All right. He also was on with Jeff Caves the other day. He was asked by Jeff about guards. You mentioned that. Of course, there's not a lot of stats for offensive line of why he thinks the Hall of Fame has been difficult for guards.
Maybe that the fact that people don't know much about offensive linemen and they don't look at them, they don't study them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, your mama doesn't know what you're doing out there about half the time. So maybe it's just a lack of information. There's a big pile up and a big, you know, mess, and the offensive guard makes a hell of a block, and the back gains 2 yards for a first down, and so the back gained 2 yards. The guard didn't do anything. They just were standing there and watched the back run by.
So I think a lot of it's sort of a gut feel at that position. I mean, if you go on the defensive side, you can talk tackles, you can talk sacks, interceptions, and then you get to running backs and you get to quarterbacks and receivers, and you can kind of match numbers against people. You would think maybe that being on good teams would be something that would help him.
Sure.
Because he contributed to teams winning championships.
Packers, Steelers, anybody that had those dynasties put a lot of players in the Hall of Fame. So I don't know if that's a specific reason to put you in the Hall of Fame. I do like your sentimental angle, and I really do think that's going to make the difference here. Why would you leave him out? You know, sports writers can be a shallow breed of people. I know that, and I'm still not comfortable with sports writers deciding this kind of thing, but I don't know who else. I guess you could put together a committee and have all kinds of different football people, including media, on it. But this is the system. This is the way it works. And tomorrow, 48 sports writers will be deciding the fate of Jerry Kramer. Jerry Kramer will live the rest of his life either as a Hall of Famer or not as a Hall of Famer. I'm assuming that he would love to do it as a Hall of Famer. He's an elderly guy. He's not going to be here forever, and it would be nice to see him enjoy. He's very healthy. He's very active in football still. He's a very important part of football. He goes to the Super Bowls every year. He goes to Green Bay several times a season and does things. He needs to be an ambassador that's out there with that gold jacket.
And when you look at the other 15, the 15 modern guys that I'll say you and I for sure, Fish probably younger, has seen some of them, not seen others. To me, there's always that gut feeling. Somebody gives you the name, and you either give the thumbs up or the thumbs down, and then maybe you can be discussed one way or the sure. other based on opinions. But, again, offensive line, I would only be able to do thumbs up or thumbs down. I mean, you're a Steeler fan. What do you think of Alan Faneca? Because I would have really no opinion of Alan Faneca one way or the other. I know he played a lot of years in the league, and most of them were with the Steelers.
Yeah, very steady, very consistent force.
Hall of Famer or not, I mean, that's one of those that's probably difficult.
Yeah, you need to sit down and do your research. I mean, that's the problem with these 48 voters. They got to do minutia detail on 20-plus different people. It's a job, but it's an important job. Let's hope they get it right tomorrow night.
And we'll see who gets in this time, who's left for the next time, and whether Jerry Kramer is indeed celebrating. I think it's going to be a heck of a party in Jerry Kramer's suite with sounds like his entire family. When he was on the air with Caves, I think his grandkid was in the background, like 5 years old. So I think the whole family is there, and hopefully it will be a weekend to remember for the Kramers.
I think it will.
And we'll know on Saturday night at some point. Super Bowl will be on Sports Radio The Ticket. Kevin Harlan and Boomer Esiason will have the call starting at 4:35 on Sunday. The pregame show gets going at 12 noon. Again, if you can't watch it, listen to Sports Radio 93.1 FM at 1350 AM, The Ticket, your Super Bowl station. How big is tomorrow's basketball game at Taco Bell Arena with UNLV? We'll discuss that next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Big basketball game for Boise State. Coach Rice kind of did the Paul Revere. He didn't yell, "The Rebels are coming. The Rebels are coming," did he?
Nobody.
On his right across campus?
No, but he did wear cowboy chaps.
Okay.
Look good in them. Black leather. They look good. He had a cowboy hat and everything. Looked good. And when he jumped up on the horse, I thought he was going to fall over the other side. But otherwise, once he got on it, that. And horses are scary, by the way. I'm terrified of horses. I don't know why. They're just a mysterious animal to me. That and they're big and they're scary. So good for Leon Rice for taking care of business today.
And the crowd came through. They'll have a sellout for the game tomorrow night against UNLV. And to me, this one is a big challenge. Boise State won the first meeting and won it, pulled away in the second half as UNLV diverted their game plan from going inside in the first half to going outside in the second half. Boise State may have had something to do with it because they were controlling the boards, but I thought some of it was UNLV just going away from going inside. Seven-footer, five-star recruit, McDonald's All-American, paired with the Junior College Player of the Year last year, Shakir Justin. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys almost average a double-double. McCoy, the only one in the Mountain West that does. Justin is two-tenths of a rebound away from doing it. This will be a much bigger challenge. I know UNLV, hot and cold, sort of a Dow Jones team. The four teams that they've lost to in the Mountain West are all the good teams. The five teams they've won are virtually the teams in the bottom half of the league, now that San Diego State is kind of bottomed out. But I contend that talent-wise, this matchup is going to be one of the most difficult matchups of the year for Boise State.
I don't think Boise State has anybody unless, you know, Haney brings his AAA-plus game, which he did the last time they played, so good for him. But, you know, if UNLV gets in that paint and just dominates with those two guys, Boise State can't. It's going to be a struggle to counter. That's not really the strength of their game, is to get in there. They don't have an individual guy. They're going to have to come up with a plan to tackle those guys. But with that said, we also talked earlier in the show about Boise State tomorrow night starts off a four-game stretch. I think it's the toughest four-game stretch on their schedule because next week they have the New Mexico-Utah State road trip, followed the next Wednesday night after that, followed by Nevada. I think this is the easiest of the four games. To me, this is the no-brainer of the four games. You're at home. You beat them before. You have a history of beating them in the last couple of years. I think you can solve that matchup problem based on some defenses that they can do and gang up on those guys. Perimeter defense, shut them down out there, and then just take care of the business the way you have been at home and feed off that crowd. I would be scared to death of that New Mexico, Utah State road trip, and then coming back here against Nevada. I don't care where that game is played. That scares me. Boise State has to win this game tomorrow night because I'm not sure the next three are winnable. They're winnable, but they scare me, and Boise State has zero margin for error when it comes to their NCAA resume.
All right, let's hear what Coach Rice had to say last night on our coaches' shows about playing against Brandon McCoy, the 7-foot freshman out of Chicago.
You know, you can't let him go wherever he wants to go because he can, if he sets up shop, you know, within 6 feet of the basket, he's got a nice touch and he can just put it right up and over you. And that's why he shoots 60%. And then some nights he's even better than that. So you got to keep him away from the basket as much as you can, make him have to try to shoot some, you know, a little farther out and make it just a little bit more difficult. And, you know, we call it trying to win that line of scrimmage because that's what it's like. It's, you know, in football, the offensive line or defensive line, whoever wins that battle wins the war, and that's what we see in a game like this. It's a little bit old school battle of a front line.
Again, that is going to be huge. I also think how they whistle things inside is going to be crucial. You know, maybe he gets a foul or two early in the game being overly aggressive inside, or maybe it goes the other way. Boise State will probably run George Adam. George, by the way, had one of his best games ever down at Las Vegas. 7 points, 3 rebounds, 1 block. I mean, Boise State's inside guys were fired up for that game, and I thought between George and Haney, they had the best games they've played all season against maybe the best competition.
And that needs to happen again, and I don't care what George's stat line is. I don't even care if he says 5 fouls. If he's got 5 fouls, I think that's a spectacular thing. Use him as the sacrificial lamb to get in there and beat up. One of the interesting stats about UNLV, if you're going to the game tomorrow night, watch this develop. They're the number one shooting team in the conference. They're the worst free throw shooting team in the conference. As Fish points out in our cubicle meeting this morning, that tells me that the bigs are getting to the line a lot and the bigs can't shoot free throws very well. Get in there and hack a shack away. Let George do his thing. I don't care if George fouls out in the first half. Go in there and just beat people up. Get your presence felt, and hopefully that can take care of business. I'd like to see Haney be a little bit more graceful because he can contribute offensively and get in there and bang around and do some nice things. He had a double-double in the last game against UNLV, right? The first and only time he's ever had a double-double. So he can go out and do that. I think that's a good combination to start. I have no problem with George fouling out of this game with zeros the rest of his stat line.
Looking at the numbers, the guys that don't shoot free throws, surprisingly, are not necessarily all the big guys.
Uh-oh.
Chris Clyburn, 6'6 guard, who had started 20 games, but now is coming off the bench, 54%.
Ooh.
We're talking about just the main seven guys that play. Shakur Justin, one of the big guys, the power forward, 6'7 junior, 50% at the foul line. And then you've got Brandon McCoy, the big guy, 68%, which is not awful. And then Travell Beck, the guy that has moved into the starting lineup for Clyburn, at 59%. But then you also have the point guard, Jordan Johnson, at 86%, and the off guard, Javon Mooring, at 80%. So there are a couple guys that have really pulled the free throw percentage down for UNLV.
Hack a shack on those guys. I guarantee you that those numbers have been identified in these team meetings all week.
And Coach Rice spoke about Zach Haney. Again, we think he has to have a big game inside. He did last time, and this was what Coach Rice had to say last night.
You know, he played so hard, and that's where it started. And he ran hard. He fought really good inside. And then we rebounded as a team because, you know, you're not going to go man against man against them. And you just have to outnumber them. And I think our team did a great job of that. And we have to have that kind of mentality to be able to compete against them.
Prater, you'll get there for warm-ups tomorrow night? Probably you'll try.
Okay. Definitely
look
going
at,
to the game.
Look at the teams when they're warming up. And I'd say this to all the fans. Just look at the sizes, especially of the front line. Then think, how did Boise State out-rebound them 48-29? And how did they outscore them in the paint 50-34? It was an incredible performance down in Las Vegas.
Did they do anything specific? What was the
It was just like a pack. I mean, every time there was a ball that was up in the air, there was like three Broncos there and maybe there was one Rebel. They just did it as a group.
That's how it needs to be done because they don't have an individual that can take care of those guys. So that's, you know, I don't imagine it's going to be as easy and come out and doing that exact same thing again. The Nevada coach or Vegas's coaching staff is going to be smart enough to figure that one out. But interesting, very interesting.
I think a lot of it's going to come down to where the shots are taken from UNLV. Are they taken inside or are they taken outside? And I know that their shooting percentage, the 50% that everybody's talking about, number one, for the most part, the closer you are, the easier, not that it's easy, but the big guys generally shoot a higher percentage from the floor than the people that are further out. You would expect that. So the more that Justin and McCoy shoot, the better percentage UNLV should have. Sure. You're looking at the three-point shooting from outside, and this is a team that only averages five made threes in the Mountain West. So this is a team, UNLV, that does not live by a three. 32%, 43% for the guard Johnson. He's their best outside shooter. Mooring is 34%, which is decent. And then off the bench, the two backups that come in are 31 and 36%. So this is not a team that's gonna kill you from outside. It's a team that, you know, I think the better – they want this game to be played inside about 10 feet if they can get it done.
In Vegas, Boise State won by 9 points. And here's one thing that I like keeping an eye on, and he's done this a couple of times since. Chandler Hutchinson played a great game in Vegas. He scored 32 points, but he scored 8 of his 32 points in the final 3 minutes. We've seen at least one other game at home and maybe a couple of on the road that you've covered where Chandler Hutchinson has been forced to take over a very close game and he pulls it off. I think the difference maker, even though this McCoy kid could go in the NBA draft bigger or long, or first in front of Hutchinson because he's a bigger guy, he's a 7-foot guy, that's the NBA motto. But Hutchinson, I think, is the only guy that can put this team on his back and over the last 2 or 3 minutes will his team to victory. I don't think McCoy can do that. He's an 18, 19-year-old true freshman. He's a physical beast, but I think Hutchinson's got it in the brain. And if this game's close as it should be, watch for Hutchinson to take over late.
But think about Hutchinson, how many things he can do.
Oh, everything.
He can take it to the basket. He can shoot the three. He can pull up, hit the mid-range jumper. McCoy is just going to hit the shot within about 8 feet.
Yeah.
So Hutchinson can create for himself. Most of the times, McCoy's going to need somebody to feed him the ball inside. So of the two players, you're right. Hutchinson, in my opinion, is the best player on the floor. We're going to see two NBA guys tomorrow going at it. Different positions, sure. Totally. And obviously a little more choices for guys that are 6'7" that are 7 feet. That's why McCoy probably will go higher than Hutchison.
Hutchison can also dish, as you know. He leads the team in assists as well, so he can attract that attention. He can track that double team. He can draw players into the paint like he does and move that body. And he's either got two choices there, work the ball into the hole because he's really good at that, or dish over into the corner or outside where Boise State loves to shoot the three-pointers. I think that's a dangerous combination for Boise State.
Join the big game party with Sports Radio The Ticket. It's going to be at Dave and Buster's on Sunday. Win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. There'll also be Steelheads tickets to wins, winner's circle prizes, and much more. Winners will be announced at halftime with Caves, JP, and the Ticket Chick. You can win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, $300 at the MB Steakhouse, and a pair of VIP joint concert passes. The big game at Dave and Buster's with KTIK, Sports Radio The Ticket. Coming up next, it's a sports update. Why does it sometimes pay to follow sports? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Start the Ticket Sports Update with a little bit about Boise State. For the second time this year, Boise State basketball coach Leon Rice had challenged fans to sell out Taco Bell Arena, this time for their game against UNLV tomorrow. And for the second time this year, he got a sellout. Rice rode his horse Max across campus today at 11 a.m. after it was announced the game was sold out. Rice will be looking for his 100th home win tomorrow when that game between the Rebels starts at 6 p.m. You can check out all the videos of Rice and Max riding around campus on KTIK Twitter page, KTIK Facebook page, the KTIK website, thanks to JP.
And I think that the next game, which will be even more important, especially if Boise State can win the games between now and Nevada, hopefully we have something else that we can be talking about, because I think 6 o'clock on a Saturday is about as good a time slot as you can get, where 9 o'clock on a Wednesday, I think it's a little bit more of a challenge. But it's one time, and it's against arguably the other team that's fighting with you for the championship. So now we'll work and move on to trying to get tickets sold for the Nevada game.
You know, the interesting thing about Boise State's basketball schedule, and this can be a little bit frustrating for fans, you have to stay on top of it, obviously, but their next five games, they start at five completely different times.
Right, let me see. The New Mexico game is the next game. It's 6 o'clock, we know, Saturday.
Tomorrow night,
I want to say the New Mexico game is an 8 o'clock Mountain Time start. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And then the Utah State game, I want to say, is at 7 on a Saturday night?
Yes, sir.
Down there. And then the Nevada game is at 9?
Yes, sir.
And the Air Force game the following Saturday, that's what, two Saturdays from tomorrow,
yes,
is
sir.
At 2. No, at 12. 12.
Noon. You nailed it, 5 for 5. So 6, 8, 7, 9, and noon for your next five Boise State basketball.
Go to the website and check it out.
Well, the Super Bowl is just a few days away, and New England Patriots are in their second one. The Atlanta Falcons, meanwhile, following their collapse, made the wild card and then lost the eventual NFC representative, the Philadelphia Eagles. And Arthur Blank has still not let his frustration go over the collapse. And now it's being targeted at Robert Kraft. Blank told the New York Times that he and Kraft had a conversation before the Patriots had their Super Bowl 51 rings made, and told Kraft, "You don't need to do anything about 28-3 in the ring." Of course, Kraft didn't listen, and now those rings have 283 diamonds to signify what happened in the game.
You think he made the conversation before he did it? I would think that the conversation with Kraft would have come after it was made.
He might have done it both. I would think if he said you don't need to do it, you probably said it before.
But I could see that maybe privately you don't like it, but I can't believe you'd say something to another owner.
Yeah, you lose a game like that, you kind of shut your mouth. I don't care if you're at a football owners meeting at a fancy resort in Arizona in March drinking cocktails. You still don't bring that kind of nonsense up.
Well, NFL plans to announce their awards this weekend. The MVP, the Coach of the Year. Also, as we talked about, they'll announce who got into the Hall of Fame. So keep an eye out that for Jerry Kramer. But one thing we might already know is who the MVP is. According to Brad E. Schlossman on Twitter, who's at the media events in Minneapolis, he tweeted out a photo of a Patriots staffer walking around what appears to be an acceptance speech already typed up for Tom Brady for the MVP award.
You'd think he had it memorized by now. He doesn't. I mean, it's the same speech, right? He says the same thing. It's not like Tom Brady ever goes out of his way to say anything crazy and spectacular. He thanks all the right people. He's smooth in that position. You know, even if you have to, because you know the actors and actresses for the Oscars always have to prepare their little speech, whether they say it or not, whether they pull out that little piece of paper or not. I guess you have to prepare for it. And in this particular case, it's the number 7 intern on the intern staff that's carrying around Tom Brady's little paperwork. But keep that stuff in your hotel room. Don't put a title on it. And Tom Brady doesn't need any help anyway.
Coach of the Year, would you think Peterson from Philadelphia?
If anybody but him. Rookie coach, right?
Second year.
Second year coach.
McVay would be the only one I would think who would be
right. But I mean, from his point of view, you lose your player, Wentz, with three games to go, and you still find a way to get. I know the playoffs don't count, but you still find a way to get yourself the number one seed. And I don't think the Eagles are here where they are if they didn't win enough games to be the number one seed.
Outside of Carson Wentz, Fletcher, a couple of other good. Name me a superstar on that roster. Name me a Hall of Famer on that roster.
This is an ensemble cast. And I think maybe it's going to be one of the things that will make it difficult for Belichick and his defensive coaches. They generally like to try to take somebody out of the game. Yes. Now, you might say, well, we want to make it tough on the quarterback. But I'm talking about take a receiver, running back, tight end. Who would you put that? I mean, they got multiple tight ends. They got multiple receivers that are all pretty good. You know, not like a Hall of Fame receiver. And they got three different running backs that are all different.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if you can. That's why I like the Eagles, Bob. Mm-hmm. But if I like the Eagles, you should probably bet on the Patriots.
Well, talking about sports, sometimes you know it pays not to be a sports fan. You're suffering through a heartbreaking defeat. I'm sure one city will feel that way on Sunday. However, there are some upsides, like making a bunch of cash in Jeopardy. Except, unfortunately, last night, nobody knew anything about sports on Jeopardy, and this is what went down with the football category.
Football 200. Your choice, do or don't name this play in which the quarterback runs the ball and can choose to pitch it to another back. An option play. Ryan?
Football 400.
I can tell you guys are big football fans. Tom Landry perfected the shotgun formation with this team. Dallas Cowboys. Do you think we should go to commercial? Ryan?
Take it on to 600.
Okay, by signaling for one of these, a returner can reel in a kick without fear of getting tackled. Fair catch. Two clues left, Ryan.
800.
These penalties are simultaneous violations by the offense and defense that cancel each other out. And they are called offsetting penalties. Let's look at the $1,000 clue, just for the fun of it. Jimmy?
As Minneapolis' U.S. Bank Stadium prepares to host Super Bowl 52, I'm looking at the Ring of Honor with names from this defensive line that took the Vikings to four Super Bowls.
If you guys ring in and get this one, I will die. Who are the purple people eaters?
And normally when I'm with my friends, we would have to buzz in if it was maybe me and you and Fish, and we'd all probably know some of these answers. But you could have calmly answered all five of those against those people. It would have been worth $3,000. Because it went 2, 4, 6, 8, and then 1,000. If you add it up, that's $3,000. And I could have run that category. Now, maybe I wouldn't have gotten the other categories, but yeah. I could have gotten that one.
Well, speaking of the NFL, it's not expected that Le'Veon Bell will hit free agency this year, but if he does, it might be quite expensive for some teams. Eric Stemkopf, who is a self-proclaimed Jets spokesperson, reached out on Twitter to Bell and said, "I speak on behalf of the Jets. We will give you $60 million in cash if you come play for us." Bell then responded, saying, "That ain't enough to come run with the Jets."
And I think that's smart of Bell, because I think so many times you'll see a running back leave a very good situation and they end up not doing nearly as good when the line or the quarterback, the receivers of the offense or whatever just are not up to the caliber of what you've left. And I think he's good for the Steelers. The Steelers are good for him. I think they need to settle their differences, because I don't think either will be as good without each other.
Yeah, I mean, Le'Veon Bell's a little bit of a hothead. I don't like some of his decision-making, and let's hope he doesn't backtrack and end up with the Jets or some other team in that situation, like you just said. The Steelers, this is one of the times where the Rooney family needs to pony up, give him whatever the market value is worth. I don't think you have to go out there for 5, 6, 7 years. I don't know what the standard running back contract is right now. Give him 3 to 5 years and $75 million, and let's make up and play nice and move on.
Seems like the Steelers, for a team that used to never have drama lately, or a team that seems to really corner the market on it. I don't know. Is it the personalities of the players that they have? Is it Tomlin maybe not doing as good a job of keeping things on the straight and narrow as, say, a Cowher or a Chuck Knoll? Is the latest family members of the Rooney family that are in charge of this thing not nearly as on top of things as the previous?
I wouldn't go as far as the Rooney family. Tomlin's going to let a little, he's going to be the kind of coach that's going to let things get a little slippery. And he's just got some really dynamic personalities. I mean, Roethlisberger, Brown, and Bell are dynamic personalities. It's been one of those weird years. Everything from Shazier's drama to Ben Roethlisberger to, I mean, it's just all over the place. Yeah, it's been a bad year for the drama for the Steelers. I thought they were going to thrive on that, but Jacksonville just proved to be a better football team.
Things got a little testy last night in Denver between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Denver Nuggets, but just not between the players. The Denver Nuggets hit a Gay-Woody three-pointer, after which a fan ran onto the court and confronted Russell Westbrook. Westbrook then shoved the fan away. Luckily, nothing else happened. No word yet on if the fan will be punished by either the Nuggets or the NBA or the city.
You know, it's funny. If I'm sitting there and I'm calling the play-by-play of that as it's happening, I think shove was a little too strong a word. I think I might have used the word push. To me, shove is a higher extreme of pushing somebody out of the way. I think he was pretty soft, if you will, for somebody that was out on the floor.
A little disappointed in my media brethren on this story. I think they screwed it up one more time. If you do a Google search, just punch in Westbrook and fan. Almost every single story, the headline, NBA will not punish Westbrook for punching, pushing, striking fan, whatever word you want to use. That's a no-brainer to me. The NBA, there's no way in hell the NBA can come down on this. In order to stop this kind of behavior, you must come down hard on the fan. I want to see the headline, NBA wants to pursue charges against this fan. Denver Nuggets want to pursue charges against this fan. However it works, you can't just let this fan get away on a drunken bender and let him go for a misdemeanor ticket and 12 hours of community service. This is one of those rare instances where I think you need to send a message. You don't have to put him in prison for 3 years, but figure out a way to make a statement, because this kind of stuff can't happen. And moving forward, you know it's going to happen.
Well, MLB free agency market continues to remain slow. Spring training reporting day is just a week, just a couple weeks away. And according to Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, players had a conference call where they asked about the viability of collectively refusing to show up to spring training until February 24th, which is the latest day they could report. However, the union informed players that an organized action would violate the CBA because it would be an unlawful strike.
I think one of the biggest problems Major League Baseball has right now is, and maybe this is something that they'll have to hash out when the CBA expires, I believe it's in 2 years, you don't get enough chance to make money in your first 6 or 7 years in baseball. So now you're going to make your money as a free agent as you're getting closer to 30. And it looks like maybe in this post-steroid era, the people aren't as good after 30 as they were in the steroid era.
Sure.
So I think they're going to need to do some things to make it so that the money goes more to the players that are in their prime. The problem is that the players that are older that are going to be not getting the money in their prime, and then if they switch the way the game is being played, won't get it in their later years either, aren't going to want to vote for it.
That's a tough one, Bob. You lost me. Sorry.
Did I lose you, Fish?
No, I understood it. But you basically either you let everyone become a free agent, the Yankees have all the good young players, or you wait and then the Yankees won't pay anyone and everyone will complain.
I do understand that, you know, it seems a little odd that we're paying the biggest paychecks are going to the 10-year guys whose career's already peaked and they're kind of going down. Mm-hmm. When the 6 to 8 year guy is on fire, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So, pitchers and catchers report anytime soon, Bob?
Yeah, about 3 weeks.
Like the greatest day of your life?
It's nice. I like pitchers and catchers reporting.
There you go.
Finally, we'll end the sports update. A quick weather update, this time from a groundhog, not an iPhone. Pucks of Tony Phil saw his shadow. So according to him, and as Bob said, according to a groundhog in Pennsylvania, the entire United States will be cold for another 6 weeks.
So that in Boise, Idaho, we're going to dip all the way down to like 41. We're in the middle of our brutal winter.
You know, last year, we were complaining about everything. Oh. I mean, last year was a terrible winter.
My iPhone's weather report, my Android weather report says next week it's going to be 60.
Are you complaining or are you making a statement of fact?
I'm washing my golf clubs this weekend.
Super Bowl over, golf starts the next week.
Yeah, exactly.
And also starting next week will be Diamond Dig 8 starting Monday at 1 during Idaho Sports Talk. Tune in for your chance to qualify to win a 14-carat white gold Lee Reed 1.5-carat diamond ring worth $4,200. There'll be 17 qualifiers who will dig through a pasty perfection cake on Valentine's Day to see who gets the Lee Reed diamond. Diamond Dig 8 will start again on Monday at 1 on Sports Radio 93.1 FM at 1350 AM. The Ticket. Up next, We will be back to take a look at the Super Bowl, give you our picks again, and give you the key battles to look for during the game. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. You guys both have had teams win, Prater multiple times with the Steelers, Fish win one time with the Saints. And I got to believe, Prater, that the years that the Steelers have won or been in, you've watched it with a lot more interest than you will a year where the Steelers are not in.
I got stories across the board, Bob. I got stories across the board. I became a Steelers fan in the 70s because of the Immaculate Reception, and obviously they won four of them in pretty good fashion. And I just did what typical kids did. I picked my nose and cheered what my dad cheered for and was happy that the Steelers confetti was coming down. In the late 90s, when the Steelers played a Super Bowl in Tempe, Arizona, I had tickets to the game, tailgated. 2 hours before kickoff, started walking into the gate, and before I walked into the gate, I somehow had sold my ticket for $1,000 and went to a sports bar and watched it.
Wow.
And it's the first time the Steelers had ever lost a Super Bowl, and I completely blame myself.
So what made you decide that $1,000 would be worth more than the experience of going to the game?
We were down there we were going to go golfing, me and my buddies, for the next two or three or four days after the Super Bowl on an Arizona golf trip, and when all of a sudden I had $1,000 extra cash in my pocket, we upgraded the courses we were going to play, and I thought I could get 4 days of pleasure out of golf. And then, you know, Steelers were going to cruise in the Super Bowl. They were going to blow them out. I could watch it on a sports TV, and then no harm, no foul. But then they lost, and it screwed things up. I was able to go to the 2006 Super Bowl in Detroit, first and only Super Bowl I went, where they won, beat the Seahawks, you know, Bettis' last game, and it was just a spectacular day. Still to this day, though, the greatest Pittsburgh Steelers memory for me was the 76 catch. Lynn Swann against, I forget his first name, the cornerback was Washington. Maybe Mark Washington was the defender. We've all seen the Lynn Swann diving play. Still to this day, one of the greatest plays in Super Bowl history.
Fish, you've got one Super Bowl for the Saints. What do you remember most about it? What was the most appealing moment of it?
I think mine's probably the most famous moment would be the onside kick to start the second half, because the Saints were down in that game. The offense didn't look good, and it looked like it could be bad. I think they were losing 10-3 at that point. And then my other favorite moment was the interception that they took back, because then I knew they'd won. Mm-hmm. It was as soon as I did that, I was like, okay, I can relax. We're going up against Peyton Manning. He's basically as good as Tom Brady in the fourth quarter. So as soon as I got the interception, I was like, whoo, I got it. I can relax. If they score, it's going to take a miracle. So those are the two I remember the most.
So if you want to have a memorable party, you can hit KTIK.com to win some grub and scrub for the big game this Sunday. Westside Drive-In provides a big game feast for up to 15 people, and Molly Maid will come by to clean up the kitchen and viewing area. Again, registration's going to end soon. Close it up Friday at 8. Friday at 5. That's today at 5. Big game grub and scrub giveaway brought to you by Westside Drive-In, Molly Maid, and Sports Radio The Ticket. So this week, I think it's going to be a bigger deal if the Eagles win than if the Patriots win for their fans. The Patriots have won multiple times, where the folks in Philadelphia have not won. I got to believe, and Prater, you've seen multiple Super Bowls for your team, and it depends on maybe how old you are and where you get your first championship.
Sure.
But I would think that the championship that you get for the first time in franchise history has got to be more memorable.
It would be very memorable for Philadelphia. I'm not sure how it would resonate to the rest of the country. As much as the Patriots are hated, they're also beloved across the country. There's probably more Patriots fans in this country than there are Eagles fans. So it would certainly mean a lot to the Eagles franchise. Not that it would mean a lot to the Patriots, but you know, if those guys know that we've seen the smoke, we've seen the rumors, we've heard the rumors about Belichick and Brady and Kraft and whether this threesome will be together for the rest. You know, this could be it. Whether it's, you know, those guys know, and maybe there's some motivation there. But I do think that it's going to be the one thing that I'm very confident saying is a close game. I mean, the Patriots have won 5 Super Bowls. Have you looked at the margin of points? 3-3-3-4. And last year's was the biggest margin of victory for the Patriots in winning the Super Bowls at 6 points. So if you're looking for the points, that's definitely an area where you want to go. But the Patriots do not blow out anybody in the Super Bowl, regardless of their domination.
Well, you say 6, but it was 6 in overtime.
There you
right?
go.
So it was really 0, yeah.
There you go.
Jeff Cave's in studio. He's going to take over along with Mike Prater in a matter of minutes. Jeff, what do you guys have on your portion of Idaho Sports Talk that will continue through 6?
You know, we'll meet the new defensive line coach Have you met him from Boise State?
No, I have not.
So have you learned how to pronounce his name yet?
No, I have not.
We need a little help. Practicing.
Yeah.
Kawahaaha.
Kawahaaha.
I think it's Coach Cow. I think they don't.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like
don't
that.
I think they mess around much, but he followed Gary Anderson around. You know, he's a Ute Prater.
Oh yeah.
So he played there, I think, with Coach McBride, and he's been a D line coach this whole time. He was most recently at Oregon State. Andy Benoit joins us at 5 o'clock. Coach Cow will be here right at about 3:15. And then we go out to the Hall of Fame at 4 o'clock, and they're out at the Super Bowl, of course, and get an update on Jerry Kramer with the director there who talks about the procedure and how it works and the voting and why there's been so few offensive guards for, like, I don't know, it was like 20-some-odd years they didn't have many offensive guards in. So a lot of Super Bowl conversation, of course, and we will break down some of the UNLV-Boise State game like you guys have.
Very good. And, again, Coach Rice today rode the horse. Jeff, you and Mike were in town. Do you guys remember the Pokey Allen ride? Because I guess it's the second time now in history that a Boise State coach has had a major ride on a horse.
I guess. Yeah. I guess. Somebody's keeping track of that.
You remember,
somewhere.
Mike, that ride?
Oh, yeah. Caves and I were in the middle of all that nonsense.
I don't think I was down there on Broadway. Maybe Tom Scott was. I was probably at the buffet at the luncheon saying, hey, this is my shot with nobody around. And it was, I don't know if it was snowing that day, but he actually went down a street, didn't he?
Yeah. Parts of Broadway. I'm not sure how far down Broadway he got, but he rode from Broadway somewhere into the front of the Student Union building, if I remember right.
I think they're a little smarter now. They're not going there.
Yeah, stay off. Keep the horses off Broadway.
And Coach Rice had a pretty good day to do it. If you said it was snowing the last time that a coach did that, it wasn't snowing today.
No, piece of cake.
So you got the Eagles.
I like the points. I definitely like the points. Definitely taking the 4.5 points. And I think at the end of the day, I think the Eagles can pull it out. But you know, you'd be crazy to go against Tom Brady. So I'm not going to settle for any team. I'm gonna take the points.
I think the Eagles are going to win the game, but I am worried that the Brady versus Foles matchup, I could see Foles basically being, you know, Cinderella turning back into a pumpkin kind of a thing.
Yep, agreed.
And, you know, he maybe throws a couple of interceptions or gets sacked or, you know, passes wobble around and he doesn't get it off. I mean, he looked amazing against the Vikings.
Even if he plays well, you know Tom Brady's going to have the ball late and you know Tom Brady's going to have a chance to win it. It's going to come down to that final drive.
And I will be interested to see what the makeup of the crowd looks like, because when you go to a Super Bowl, there are so many people that are not season ticket holders of one team or the other. Is it decidedly for the Eagles or is it kind of split?
This one's going to be split.
Mike Prater is going to sit alongside Jeff Caves. They're going to talk more Jerry Kramer, more the Super Bowl, and more Boise State UNLV. I'll be on with the broadcast tomorrow with Abe Jackson at 5:30. Join me from Taco Bell Arena. Bob Beeler along with Mike Prater. Caves and Prater up next. Keep it tuned to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.